The Senate Judiciary Budget Division meeting will come to order. Today is Thursday, April 16th. The year is 2009, and we're in room 212 at the Capitol. We'll start out with amendment to get us in the shape that I want in here. Then I'd like the A8 amendment. And you'll note that this is a omnibus judiciary funding bill, if you will. And what I want is to make somebody offer an amendment to
Mr. Chair, are you looking for somebody to move the A8 amendment? I'll move the A8 amendment.
Thank you. Discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by aye.
Aye.
Contrary, nay. Motion prevails. Next, I would like to have you move the A7 amendment. This deals with correction language in the bill dealing with the courts.
Mr. Chair, I'll move it, although I'm kind of curious how come the A7 amendment comes before A8. If it's, never mind. I'll move the A7 amendment anyway.
Normally, you see the later ones go back to the earlier ones, so.
Discussion.
It's a council thing, I guess.
Well, I hope so, but in this case, we have the A7 amendment discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by aye.
Aye.
Contrary, nay. Motion prevails. And I'd like to thank you, members, because we're taking up the juvenile omnibus bill, which sets forth funding for the courts, the boards of public defense, and the civil legal services, board of judicial standards, tax court, and the Uniform Law Commission. And in addition to that, we have a bill from Senator Mao, a Senate file 2018. The court's bill, Senate file 1627. And these are the bills that were heard in our division. And I think the best way is we'll take and have Mr. Turner proceed with a run-through, and then he'll be followed by Mr. Bacchus.
Mr. Chairman, members, a quick overview. The Judiciary General Fund base is $752 million. This bill contains reductions of $16.9 million. Combine that with increased revenue of $35.7 million. Two of them comprise a net impact of $52.6 million, which was our budget target cut. That's a 7% reduction from base. Bill also has a one-time federal fund appropriation of $5.6 million for the district courts to give the article a net cut, or the bill a net cut of $47 million. Now I'll go through the spreadsheet. A quick explanation. We've got four columns. The first two are the governor's rec and the governor's tails. They're there for comparative purposes. The third column is the chair's recommendations for this biennium. The fourth column are the chair's recommendations in tails for fiscal years 12 and 13. On the left-hand line, the lines are numbered, so if you have any questions, please indicate the line. And we'll start with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has a biennial base of $63,584,000. The chair recommends a cut of $1,296,000 for a total Supreme Court operations appropriation of $62,288,000. We move to civil legal services on line 9. Their base is $24,400,000. The recommendation is $496,000 reduction for a total appropriation of $23,904,000. We move to the Court of Appeals. Their base is $20,740,000. The chair recommends a cut of $422,000 for a total appropriation of $20,318,000. The District Court biennial base is $504,232,000. The chair recommends a cut of $10,530,000. That makes a general fund total appropriation of $493,702,000. The federal funds have been placed at the committee's disposal, been placed in the district courts. That's $5.6 million. So the total appropriation for the courts is $499,318,000. The tax court, with a base of $1,650,000, has a $50,000 cut for a total appropriation of $1,600,000. Page two, Uniform Laws Commission. Base of $104,000, a $4,000 cut for an appropriation of $100,000. The Board of Judicial Standards has a base of $920,000. Chair recommends $28,000 cut for a total appropriation of $892,000. And finally, the Public Defense Board has a base of $136,056,000. The Chair recommends a cut of $4,056,000 for a total biennial appropriation of $132 million. I'd like to go into the revenues increased by the bill. We'll move down to line 62 on page 2. The bill increases the parking surcharge from $4 to $12. That raises $6,592,000. It increases the civil court filing fee from $240 to $265, and that brings in $6,372,000. It increases the conciliation court filing fee from $50 to $60. That brings in $1,016,000. Increases the appellate court filing fee from $500 to $550. That raises $102,000. Increases motion fees in civil, family, and guardianship cases from $55 to $65. That brings in $722,000. And then a variety of court administration fees, which I've lumped here, lumped all together on one line. I can break them out for you if you'd like. But that package of administration fees brings in $3,019,000. And we have a per-page filing and copy fee, $1 per page. That brings in $8,354,000. The bill also levies the criminal traffic surcharge on offenses in Chapter 169, traffic offenses, on persons that successfully go through a diversion program. That raises $5,742,000. And finally, part of the court, the bill that the court brought in, they have an improved court collection effort, which they estimate will raise over the biennium $3,813,000 for a total revenue adjustment of $35,736,000. And then finally, on line 80, the bill suggests or asks the Supreme Court to consider raising the attorney license fee and I believe it's $50, and dedicating that money to the public defender. If the court does so, that would bring in the public defender an additional $2,100,000, and that would bring their appropriation up to $134,100,000. That is the spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman, and if there aren't any questions, I'll move to Arden. Article 1 of the bill, real quickly, there's only three riders. Article 1 reflects the spreadsheet. There are three riders in it, two of which are perennial riders. The first is on page 1, 1.31 to 1.34. This is in every other year. It's a contingency account for special court functions, for example. It's $5,000 each year. The example that always sticks in my mind is visiting dignitaries, things of that nature. Next page, lines 2.2 to 2.14, another rider that's in every other year. It's for civil legal services regarding legal representation of low-income clients in family law matters. Then finally, a rider that we put in 2 years ago for the Board of Judicial Standards on page 2.24 to 2.30. It's $125,000 each year for special investigative and hearing costs. This gives the board the ability to pay costs as they occur and to avoid interim year requests. Apparently, investigators charge the agency less than they do lawyers, contracted lawyers, and it also gives the agency direct oversight over their investigative costs. Those are the three riders in Article 1.
Mr. Backus?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to do the walkthrough then of Articles 2 and 3. And Articles 2 and 3 come from, for the most part, almost exclusively from Senate File 2001-8. That was the Judiciary Committee bill heard in the Judiciary Policy Committee over a course of three hearings. And the idea of that bill was to pass a number of policy-related matters that would impact this budget. So Senator Higgins used portions of those provisions in her budget, and Senator Foley has included some of them in his as well. Article 2 is the fee increases. Mr. Turner alluded to these already. So Section 1 of Article 2, and this is on page 3 of the A8 Amendment, increases various court fees, including filing fees for filing a civil action, requesting a jury, certified and uncertified copies, subpoenas, motions, executions, transcripts, trusteeship accounts, and depositing a will. And it also imposes a $1 per page filing fee for most documents in court. Sections 2 and 3 increase the parking surcharge by $8 from $4 to $12. Section 4 increases the conciliation court filing fee by $10 from $50 to $60. Section 5 increases the appellate filing fee by $50 from $500 to $550. Now all of these fees go into the general fund. Section 6 requests the Supreme Court to assess the public defender fee on all licensed attorneys. The fee would be equal to the current civil legal services fee. If the fee is imposed, it would be deposited into an account in a special revenue fund, and there's a statutory appropriation in that section that appropriates the money to the Board of Public Defense. Continuing then, Article 3, again, almost all of these are from Senate File 2018. Section 1 provides that the criminal and traffic offender surcharge, which is currently $75, must be assessed on a person who completes a diversion or similar program for a traffic-related offense. Sections 2 to 6 relating to local ordinances have been deleted by the A7 Amendment. Section 7 authorizes a court to appoint a special master to preside over pretrial matters in a case under certain circumstances. This provision is sunsetted on July 1, 2012. Section 8 strikes language identifying specific locations for misdemeanor violations bureaus in Hennepin County. Section 9 increases the conciliation court maximum filings. The consumer credit transaction claim limit is increased from $4,000 to $7,500, and the maximum claim for all other matters are increased from $7,500 to $15,000. Section 10 provides that referees may preside over conciliation courts throughout the state. Under current law, judges are required to preside except in Hennepin and Ramsey counties. Section 11 is another provision that's been deleted by the A7 Amendment. Section 12 provides for a restorative justice alternative disposition option in certain cases. It's mandatory for first-time juvenile petty offenders, and it's optional for repeat juvenile petty offenders, for nonviolent delinquent offenders, and then for adult non-felony offenders. In matters where it's optional, the prosecutor would be required to determine whether the restorative justice outcome would be appropriate under the circumstances. If so, an eligible offender is referred to a restorative justice program who would provide a suitable restorative justice outcome for the matter. Now, this provision applies only to offenders who agree to participate in the process and only in jurisdictions where suitable restorative justice resources are available. If an offender successfully completes the agreed-upon outcome, then the charges will be dismissed. If the offender fails to comply with the restorative justice outcome, the person will be referred back to court for further proceedings. Section 13 prohibits local units of government from imposing administrative penalties to enforce a state law having a felony, gross misdemeanor, or pending misdemeanor penalty. Section 14 comes from Senator Elsine's bill, Senate File 321. Under current law, a court is required to impose a minimum fine on controlled substance offenses, and then 70% of the minimum fine is supposed to be forwarded for local drug abuse prevention programs. This would expand that so that they can be also used for juvenile court drug prevention intervention programs as well. And then Section 15 repeals an obsolete section of law relating to the location of the Bloomington Municipal Court. Mr. Chair, with that, Article 4 comes from the original Senate File 1627, which was a bill authored by Senator Foley, heard in the Policy Committee, and then referred to the Finance Committee. It was proposed by the Minnesota Judicial Branch, and since they haven't had a chance to present the bill in this committee, and since it's their initiatives, I thought that they would walk through Article 4, if that's okay.
Yes. You want that now? Mr. Sell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. My name is Sue Dosal. I am a state court administrator. Thank you for this opportunity. Article 4 of this bill does relate to the bill that the judiciary has requested of the legislature. It does three things. It helps to automate about 1.2 million citations and parking tickets that the courts handle of about their 2 million cases. It secondly provides for better enforcement of judicial sanctions and through the improved court collection process results in some significant new revenue that will inure to the benefit of state and local government. It also includes some housekeeping, miscellaneous housekeeping matters, but much of the bill really deals with streamlining, clarifying the very complicated maze of statutory language that deals with the distribution of fines and fees in order that we can actually program that and do it efficiently. Section 1 and 2 clarify that the Chief Justice may determine the pay and expenses of retired justices of the Supreme Court when they serve on the court, just as he is able to do for other levels of court. Section 3 clarifies that certain fines and forfeited bail are deposited in the state treasury. This is a state funding cleanup issue. Sections 4 and 5 provide that law library fees shall be applied only once per case rather than once per charge in these or citation matters. Sections 6 through 12 provide unique statutory numbers for the crime of sale of controlled substances in the fifth degree, possession of meth precursors, and driving while impaired. This is part of the allowing us to have a unique number for each of these different levels of offense because they have different fines and distributions and allow us to program that. Sections 13 to 16, 18, 19, and 20 do the similar kinds of things for DWI and make them conforming to the changes that were made in sections 9 through 12. Section 17 also is a state funding cleanup issue. It clarifies how the chemical use assessment charge and surcharge are to be distributed. Section 20, also a state funding cleanup regarding the distribution of state patrol fine and forfeited bail. Section 21 provides that the criminal and traffic surcharge shall be applied only once per case. Section 22 is a housekeeping cleanup relating to criminal background checks involving potential disqualifiers for judicial branch employees. Section 23, another state funding cleanup. It strikes obsolete language dealing with certain expenses of judges that used to be paid by county boards and no longer are. Section 24 establishes authority for the judicial branch to establish the uniform collection policies and procedures. Section 25 updates language relating to the disposition of fines and fees for Ramsey County District Court. Section 26 establishes uniform distribution of money collected for municipal fines in all counties except Hennepin and Ramsey, and that distribution is two-thirds for municipalities, one-third for the state. Sections 27 and 29 permit the judgment creditor's attorney to order disclosure of assets for judgment, enforcement, and conciliation court and district court respectively, rather than applying to the court to ask the court to order that same disclosure. Section 28 eliminates the statutory requirement that original documents in probate proceedings be retained for 5 years. Section 31 repeals the court authority to order imprisonment for non-payment of fines. It provides that fines and restitution are due on the date imposed, unless the court provides otherwise. Section 32 repeals the judicial counsel's authority to promulgate the uniform fine schedule, and this is then reenacted in Section 36. And it eliminates the 20% state share of minimum fines category. This is pre-state funding language, also is a state funding cleanup. Section 33 establishes the authority for a court to refer unpaid fine to the collection process. Section 34 repeals the authority to order imprisonment for non-payment of fines. Section 35 provides that a conviction for a misdemeanor violation that was treated as a petty misdemeanor by inclusion on the uniform fine schedule may not be used to enhance a subsequent violation to a gross misdemeanor. And Section 36, it moves this judicial counsel authority to establish the uniform fine schedule, the existing authority, to a new section. And this uniform fine schedule is what we commonly call the payables list. This provides that the for the enforcement of judicial sanctions in these cases where the offender fails to pay or appear in court. It also specifies that the payables list or this uniform fines schedule be adopted on or before January 1 and becomes effective on July 1 unless the legislature by law provides otherwise. Section 37 provides that court-ordered fines and restitution are due on the date imposed unless the court provides otherwise. Section 38 removes the ability of probation to request a hearing if the fine ordered had not been paid prior to the 60 days before the term of probation expires. Section 39 removes the ability for the court to extend probation if it finds that the fine has not been paid. And Section 40 provides that disbursements of money collected for prosecution costs shall be paid to the subdivision of the government that employed the prosecuting attorney. And Section 41 repeals statutory provisions superseded by this article.
Are there any questions of Ms. Dosell?
Mr. Chair. Just a very technical matter. If you go back to page 38, the uniform fine schedule on line 17, it says it should be submitted to the legislature. We usually try to identify specific committees or, you know, chairs or whatever, and ranking minority members to send it to so that there's more direction there. And it says it should be submitted by January 1st. And we usually try to avoid saying something by January 1st because that means people are going to have to work over the holidays to get something here that nobody's going to look at until at least mid-January anyway. So I would suggest that we come up with language just to be submitted to whatever the appropriate committees in the legislature are by January 15 of the year, and then they're to be effective on July 1st.
Mm-hmm. And that's in the motion?
I don't know. I have to defer to council to give me some assistance to the date I can figure out. It's just who to submit within the legislature to. Usually, is it the policy and the budget divisions?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Betzold, usually what we say would be delete legislature and shall be submitted to the chairs and ranking minority members of the Senate and House of Representative committees having jurisdiction over criminal justice policy and funding by January 15th.
Okay, I'd make that motion, Mr. Chair.
Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hagan.
Does that mean you or to me? With criminal justice.
Madam Chair and Senator Fole,
Mr. Chair,
I would interpret that as being both. I mean, okay. You know, policy and funding defined broadly.
We'll just make the two budget chairs.
Oh, sure. I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
He didn't hear you, I don't think.
Pardon?
I don't think he heard you.
Oh, I'll renew my motion.
And would you please restate it for the record?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair and members, I'm sorry.
Okay.
On line 38.17, delete legislature by January 1 and insert chairs and ranking minority members of the Senate and House of Representatives committees having jurisdiction over criminal justice policy and funding by January 15.
You've heard the motion. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by aye.
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 Contrary, nay. Motion prevails. Further, Senator Ingebrigts.
I just have a question. Ms. Dozdell, page 17. Just you know, I don't think I was here the day we talked about this. But can you give me the works of how that actually works there? Apparently, it must have been somewhat encumbersome before the change here. It actually had to go through two different hands before it ended up with the state. Is that right?
Mr. Chair and Senator Britson.
Ms. Dozdell.
You said page 17. So which? 17?
I'm sorry, 17.30. I mean, Mr. Chair, it certainly makes sense to me. Can you just explain to me how?
Well, right now, this is obsolete language that really we aren't complying with because these fees are coming to the state.
They're coming directly there.
County now.
Okay, thank you.
So just part of the cleanup.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have a question, but not on Section 4, or not on Article 4.
Proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I have a question on pages 14 and 15, Section 13. And you and I talked about this yesterday, and I believe that your intention here for the administrative citations is for traffic and not for other administrative citations that local governments may use, like for environmental and housing inspections and dangerous animals and those kinds of things. But as I read 15.7 to 15.11, I don't get that out of that. So I'm wondering if we could clarify somehow.
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, I think the operative language would be on line 15, beginning on 15.9, so local units of government may not impose administrative penalties to enforce essentially a state law, because it says a provision of this or any other chapter of law. So it's chapter 609 or any other chapter of law having a felony, gross misdemeanor, misdemeanor, petty misdemeanor penalty. So I don't believe it would prohibit local units of government from enforcing ordinances in any manner they so choose. It would just how state laws are enforced. But it is not limited to traffic offenses. It would be any state law.
State law. And Mr. Chair and Mr. Backus, then if a city was, well, let's take dangerous dogs, just for example. Some parts of state law deal with dangerous dogs, but they also give the authority to the cities to deal with dangerous dogs as well. So would there be a circumstance where that would get muddled up and they would be unable to take action under the state law that we would be harming their ability to deal with that in any way?
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, I mean, it does, on line 15.7, it says, except as otherwise specifically provided by state law. So certainly if state law authorized administrative penalties or deferred, I guess, to the local units of government to, you know, fill in, say, some of the blanks in state law, I mean, that would certainly be okay. You know, it would just prohibit, again, a local unit of government from using administrative penalties to enforce the state law provision that would be basically contrary.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair, I know that there are some city folks here, and they might have other questions, but or maybe that answered it for them. I don't know.
All right. I want to check.
I see some people nod.
Mr. Sell, are you through testifying? And so we'll take the people with questions, comments on the legislation, remembering that this is not a policy committee and that it's a fiscal committee, so keeping that in mind.
Mr. Chair, senators of the committee, I'm Henry Reimer. I'm the Director of Inspections in Minneapolis in Department of Regulatory Services. I will do my best to confine myself to the numbers and fiscal impact and stay out of policy. My department is responsible for housing code enforcement, building code enforcement, the enforcement of the city's environmental regulations, animal control, business licensing regulations, which include taxi cabs, food establishments, liquor establishments, pawn shops, and things like that. Last year, our department issued approximately 7,000, a little over 7,000 administrative citations, and we generated $3.2 million of revenue each of the last 2 years from administrative citations. None of those citations and none of that revenue was generated from the issuance of administrative citations for traffic violations. As a matter of fact, the Minneapolis Code of Ordinances, which enables us to issue administrative citations, precludes us from issuing those citations for violations of Chapter 609, 168, 169, the traffic and criminal codes of the state statutes. We issue administrative citations for our housing division is the division in which we issue the vast majority of our administrative citations, housing code violations. Violations such as the operation of unlicensed rental properties, deficient heating systems. In other areas, we would issue administrative citations for the operation of unlicensed taxis. To give you some context of what that $3.2 million means to Minneapolis, the entire housing inspections budget and our problem properties unit budget is $6.6 million for 2009. So that's almost half of what it costs the city to operate housing inspections and problem properties. This is a part of our cost recovery operations, our effort to make our enforcement activities not a burden on the taxpayers, but imposing the costs on the folks that create those costs for the city's regulatory authorities.
Can I interrupt you a minute? We clearly don't want to have this law or ordinances or whatever else that we end up with to be chasing dogs or inspecting plumbing or a whole host of other things that you've stated, and the effort here is that we looked at, one, the money, but the most important thing was that the need to deal with the courts to reduce their caseload, and we're looking at and still working on an issue where we have someone serving in the capacity to do part of those, a hearing officer, for example, like the city of Minneapolis uses. We would be looking at something similar to that, and not the kinds of issues that you or other people in the state of Minnesota are talking about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we feel that there is actually very little disagreement over the objectives here. In fact, prior to 2004, our housing code enforcement was a burden on the state court system, because that was thousands of cases that were prosecuted criminally as misdemeanors that were going through the court system with minimal fees and revenue to the court system, but adding a lot of work to the public defender's office, as well as courts and court reporters and so on and so forth. So we feel that the move toward administrative enforcement, not only has it made us more effective and efficient, but it's taken some of the burden off of the court system, and so we kind of share that objective. Our reference with the language, and I interpret it as applying, when it talks about any chapter of law, I would interpret that as applying to state statute. I think that we would suggest that it would be an improvement to make that crystal clear, because our interpretation may not be the interpretation that a judge would impose on that language. So that's one idea with respect to that.
Senate counsel, would you care to speak to that?
Mr. Chair and members, if you want it to be absolutely clear, I think it is pretty clear already, but if you want it to make it absolutely clear, if you put on 15.10 before law, state law, so then it would be a provision of this or any other chapter of state law.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that would be a significant improvement. We still have some concern around the edges on the issues that Senator Higgins addressed, and where we have an interplay between local ordinance and state statute. And there are primarily three areas where we have that. One would be in animal regulations, where we have a statute with some level of detail, but then leave some additional detail and discretion and authority to municipalities. We also have that in the liquor code enforcement and also building code enforcement. So we have in each of those three areas a hybrid type of enforcement approach, where sometimes we're enforcing state law and sometimes we're enforcing a local ordinance.
And are you satisfied that this legislation will solve those problems for you, or do you have something that council should be looking at?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do not have a specific language proposal to convey at this point. And seeing as how we're just here talking about financial impact, those issues that I just mentioned of the overlap of those three areas are minor in terms of the revenue impact on Minneapolis. So I think that the members of the Senate are... there will be additional opportunity to take a look and work together to make sure that what is being achieved is what is being intended. We are completely satisfied with that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll move on line 15.10 before the word law, insert state.
Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by aye.
Aye.
Contrary, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Engelbrecht.
Mr. Chair, to this particular section here, I do have an amendment I'd like to offer, and also some testimony if I could.
Certainly.
Okay, I'd like to have, I'd like to make a motion, I guess, to delete section 13, and that of course comes from the administrative penalties. As you well know, Senator Foley, we've been talking about this for some years here, and at least the three that I've been here, and in our rural communities and rural cities, rural counties out there, this has been working real well for for them to have an alternative and also to help actually reduce the caseload for the courts to have these alternative methods. So I would like to offer that amendment, and also maybe you have some testimony, if I could, from Minnesota Sheriff's Association Executive Director Jim Franklin and Ann Finn, if possible, real quickly, if that would be all right.
Go ahead, yeah.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and I would respectfully request your support for this amendment. We agree that this issue needs clarification, but as you know, Senator Foley, we have a difference of opinion about the direction this is going. We do have legislation that has advanced without opposition that we believe actually would provide cost savings, and that would be our bill that would provide some limited authority in this area for local units of government to use administrative fines for traffic enforcement. We believe that legislation would actually result in a cost savings, and with all due respect, we don't support the provision that's in the bill.
Mr. Franklin?
Senator, members, we also would just echo what Ms. Finn has already highlighted without repeating. Law enforcement community has come together after 3 or 4 years of very difficult discussion and put forth a proposal that we all can support. At this time, we would not support the way this bill is written, and we ask you to support the amendment to delete it.
Thank you. Senator Hagenberg, go ahead.
I assume that there's a fiscal note or a fiscal impact to this. Could we hear about that? The fiscal effect of the administrative citations?
Have you got those? Mr. Turner will respond to
Mr. Chairman, members. Yes, the fiscal note does address it. In the end, however, its conclusion is because the revenue and workload estimate that they use is not based on an actual assessment of the caseload actually being handled by the administrative hearing process currently, it has not been included in this revenue estimate or cost estimate. Essentially, what they said is it's very difficult, if not impossible, to come up with a realistic fiscal impact one way or the other. There are a number of different scenarios, and so essentially, the fiscal notes maintains that for now it's a wash.
You're referring to this legislation rather than the whatever the witnesses here are testifying.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was speaking with Senator Cohen. The fiscal note for the
administrative citations.
I believe that came in at about 3.2 million a year, total of 6.4 for the biennium, I believe so.
So, Mr. Chair, if we deleted this section, it would make a $6 million hole in your budget?
Yes.
Ouch.
Mr. Chair, would this make a $6 million hole in your budget? This is money that you've never had before. Is that what you're saying? I mean, is that accurate? And it's still allowing the cities and the counties to be able to administer these citations in a fashion where it's working out good for them. I mean, we've heard testimony, I think, over the past years about how good that does work.
That's true.
And I don't dispute that there's differences of opinion here. I think it's clear that if we accept the compromise that came from the other body, that we're talking about the 6.2 hole in the thing, and that in itself is, puts us out where we're really having trouble to keep ahead afloat with the what dollars we were given to
Mr. Chair, follow up on that. So it's fair to say then that the workload of the judiciary is going to, is that reflected also? Obviously, that must be reflected in that number.
Well, I would think that, but the difference between whatever the House compromise, so to speak, and what we're proposing here are two different things.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I'm not familiar with the House compromise. At least I'm not familiar with that. Can somebody tell me what that would be?
Mr. Chair, I think I can.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair, I think it would be the ability to fine at a maximum of $60, and 40 of that would go to the local government, and 20 would come to the state.
Okay, $60.
That's a pretty decent compromise.
Did I get that right, Mr. Franklin?
$60.
60.
Yes.
Okay. I ask some testimony from Mr. Hyland as well.
Mr. Hyland.
Mr. Chairman, members, Eric Hyland from Meserly and Kramer, representing the Sheriff's Association, the Chiefs of Police Association. Maybe just a point of clarification, and maybe Mr. Turner can clarify this a little bit. The three million dollar fiscal note that folks are talking about is the existing fiscal note for the House file. And the Senate file being carried by Senator Terrell Clark. It's my understanding that this language, that there's no particular revenue attached to this particular language, and so I guess I need some clarification in terms from Mr. Turner in terms of what the fiscal impact would be upon the removal of this, because as Senator Ingebrigtsen has suggested, there is some dispute over the fact that the current administrative citations used by municipalities are by and large being used for offenses that hard tickets aren't being written for now. And I know we don't want to get into a long conversation about why the surcharge revenue may be decreasing. We would argue that we have fewer police departments writing tickets, we have fewer sheriff's offices doing traffic control, and that's primarily the reason why the surcharge revenue has gone down, not because of a dramatic increase in the use of administrative citations. So I guess I'd like a little bit more clarification in terms of, because previous conversations I've had with Mr. Turner kind of indicated that they're not booking any particular savings or revenue on the spreadsheet because of this particular section.
Senator Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure then with what, I'm sorry if I've interrupted Mr. Hyland, although I just have to add parenthetically, it's interesting having the two of them up there, Mr. Hyland and Ms. Finn, who are kind of the predecessors to my staff. a few people understand that, right?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen. I poured a lot of coffee on room 123.
there was Senator Miriam's staff when he was chairman of the Finance
Our
Committee.
Our pencils are not sharp.
Sharpened a lot of pencils, too, Senator Benson.
And they would have chastised us for talking about the other body. At least their boss would have. But I'm sorry if I interrupted your testimony, but I understand this is difficult. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm trying to follow your amendment. I mean, you've just requested striking the provision, correct? Okay, so what's difficult, as Senator Higgins pointed out, is that, Mr. Chairman, we can certainly do that, but obviously what you're attempting to do is to try to mitigate some of these cuts to the judiciary. And this, so I think, Senator, as I understand it, Senator Ingebrigtsen's amendment would just exacerbate what's already a pretty difficult situation. If we have to rework we make amendments all the time so we can rework the spreadsheet and the bill. But so I don't know if, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you weren't suggesting any way to make up that revenue, though.
No, I have no way to make up the revenue. There's a question as to whether it's actually going to be, I guess that question again goes to Mr. Turner, in fact, whether we're going to be, are we going to be talking about that much of a revenue loss here? I mean, so long as it's accurate, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, If you delete this section, we revert to current law and current projections. The discussion, at least the fiscal discussion, over the last 2 or 3 years about administrative fines has gone back and forth and is more about projection into the future as to how many counties and cities are going to jump on this bandwagon and whether or not the state surcharge money will continue to decline and eventually precipitously so. But your amendment right now, which is revert us to current law and current projections. And I may add that according to the fiscal note, this provision itself, basically we're at current law and current projections because the court figures that there are costs involved to the court system to take on all of these cases, and there's benefits to the state and the increased surcharges, and they both, according to the note, they both come out to roughly a little over $4 million a year. So the court called it a wash for this, for Senator Foley's provision. If you delete it, we're back at current law, which is current projections. So that's where we stand. The Senator Clark House of Representatives compromise is of the three positions, that's the only one with a fiscal note that projects a loss, and that's a loss of $3.2 million a year. Is that useful?
Further discussion? We have the Higgins. I thought you.
I'll renew my motion, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Discussion on the motion. I would only say that indicate that I do not support Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion and would ask that you reject that. All those in favor indicate by aye.
Aye.
No.
No.
Motion prevail. Favor. Are there further questions, suggestions? Is there anyone in the court system that wants to expand on what previously testified to?
Well, Mr. Chair, if nobody else is interested in talking to us, I'll move the bill.
All right. You've heard the motion. Discussion on that. Yes, Joel.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, can I be heard briefly?
Sure. Speak out. Tell us who you are.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Joel Carlson. I'm here on behalf of the Association for Justice, and we have worked with the court and a number of the bar associations in their efforts to find adequate revenue for the courts, and I want you to know that a number of the increases in court fees that are in the proposal are supported by a good number of members of the bar. We do have particular heartburn over the per page fee that is in the bill, hopefully as you move this bill along, you'll consider that and the fairness of that provision to the parties. I do want to point out one particular section of the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, that we believe has some potential for significant negative consequences to the court, and that is Article 3, Section 7. It is the appointment of special masters, and we believe that there are some unintended consequences to that language, Mr. Chair and members, that we would like you at least to consider, and it would be our recommendation that that section maybe not be contained in the bill. This came up as an amendment at the Judiciary Committee at the very last, it was the very last amendment before they moved the bill out. We really didn't have a chance to look at the fiscal implications of it as the language is drafted. But the language is inconsistent with the current Rule 53 relative to the appointment of special masters, and it is inconsistent in a way that we think will cause confusion and that it will be actually harmful to the court and to the parties. First of all, there's no requirement in the language that puts any parameters around the duties of the special master, and this will require time for the courts to sort out and for the parties. It does not require consent of the parties to the appointment of a special master. And significantly, Mr. Chairman and members, the prohibition or the restrictions on the compensation that is in the bill for special masters, which will apply to all special masters, will make it extremely difficult to find special masters to perform this work, even when it is warranted and agreed to by the parties. The limitation of one half of the hourly compensation of a judge equates about $35 or $40 an hour. We do not believe that you will find special masters who are willing to serve, which means even in those instances where the courts would like to avail themselves of that opportunity, they would be precluded from doing so because they just simply won't be able to find someone at a level of competency to hear these dispositive and non-dispositive pretrial motions. And so we think it places a bigger burden on the court if the language remains in there, because they will not be able to find masters, special masters, that will be able to serve. So for those reasons, we have concerns about that particular provision of the bill. We've worked, I think, with all of the all the bar associations and others to try and look for ways for the courts to improve efficiency and process and provide service to the parties. We think this one just doesn't rise to that level. It was discussed at an informal hearing that Senator Olson held on various court procedures, and I think it was universally agreed to by the participants in that group that the current use of special masters is beneficial and warranted, and that it didn't need any additional assistance from the legislature. They may have some court rule changes they may like, but it certainly isn't embodied in this language before you. Be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson, yes. Senator Olson in the room?
She was here just a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, it was her bill that was.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Senator Hagan.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Carlson, it seems like every time I turn around, I read that law firms are downsizing, and it seems to me that there are probably more attorneys on the lookout for new jobs right now than probably any time in the last several years. Would you not see that being a special master, even at the dollarly rate that you talked about, could help some of these folks get over the rough period until they get into a new law firm? I think there are more people out there who might be happy to have $40 an hour.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, I don't discount or diminish the problems in the economy right now and the downsizing and job losses that we've seen not only in the legal business but across the country. I mean, when we're seeing 500,000 jobs a month gone in November, December, January, February, March, believe me, we understand that. However, you're talking about some extremely complicated matters, whether it's FELA litigation or complex class action litigation, where the courts would want to use a special master of very specialized talent that would be precluded under this language from being appointed because of this very specific nature of that language that requires the compensation to be one half of the district court judge's compensation. That applies to all special masters that would be appointed. under Rule 53. And so we don't feel that you would be able to find people to do in those, and even in the rule, Mr. Chair and members, in the rule, it talks about, the the very few minority of cases where the use of a special master is warranted. That's what the court rule says on the topic. And now you're saying in those cases where it is warranted, you'd be unable to use it because you really aren't going to be able to provide someone that will do it at that level of compensation.
So, Mr. Chair, I have a different question then. And I'm way out of my element here, I apologize, but does Rule 53 specify a salary rate now that's different from this?
Mr. Chairman and members, what the rule provides is that in the appointing order, you need to know that these costs are paid not by the court but by the parties. And that in that order where the parties consent and agree to the appointment of a special master, they agree for the level of compensation that is paid for by the parties, not for the court.
Then, Mr. Chair, would it be so terrible if we deleted that phrase, provided that the fee must not exceed one half of the salary of the district court judge? Would we be doing much in the way of harm? Like I said, I'm beyond my knowledge here, so I'll just throw it out as a question.
There was not a lot of discussion in the Judiciary Committee, and my recollection is that it was a very close vote on that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, may I speak to the issue?
Certainly. Would you please identify yourself?
Yes. My name is Michael Ford. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Bar Association, former president of the Minnesota Defense Lawyers Association, and probably the fellow that planted this seed with Senator Olson, because I talked to her about it. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to look at this until I came here today. There are some problems with it. I think they've been adequately explained as far as the cost goes. I actually wrote an article on this procedure when it first came out, or first became available about 5 or 6 years ago. The Court of Appeals raised it. My point to Senator Olson was, too many times courts and the parties don't seem to avail themselves of it. So to the extent that this statute calls everybody's attention to it, it's great. But to the extent that it tries to mandate how it's going to be set up, there are some problems. The biggest one that leaps out at me is the last sentence on Subdivision 2, which is line 10.13, which reads, "Other orders of the special master are final and not subject to review by the court." That's more power than a federal district court magistrate has. In federal district court, when a magistrate makes a ruling, it's always reviewable by the district court judge. The idea being that this is the district court judge's case, not the magistrate, or in this case, the special master. And if the case is appealed, it'll be appealed to the Court of Appeals from the district court judge's order. I don't know what the intent was of that sentence, but it might be read to mean that the special master is the final word on things, and that seems to go well beyond what Rule 53 currently provides.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Any questions? I'm hesitant to throw the out. I wonder if you would make motion to pass it on to the full committee. And at that point, if we haven't resolved anything before the committee, then it would stay the way it was. And if there's a need for change, we'd have at least the 4 days or whatever.
Well, Mr. Chair, we certainly can do that. We can certainly keep working on trying to get the language right. I don't know that we know here quite what the right thing to do is, but
I think it would be helpful if you would contact the senator and find out what kind of changes might be, and then bring them back to the full finance committee.
Very happy to do that.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman and members, we had an extensive afternoon of discussion about this with the plaintiff's bar, the defense bar, the courts, and no one felt that Rule 53 isn't adequately serving the purpose for everyone. So we're trying to negotiate on something that no one feels is in need. It's a solution in search of a problem. So as long as Senator Cohen is willing to hear this testimony in his committee, we're happy to do that.
He's ignoring you.
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, I'm...
Are you prepared to solve this problem?
No, I'm not. Senator Higgins indicated that I was ignoring everyone. I'm not. I'm reading Rule 53, and I'm inclined to agree with the testimony. And so now I'm glancing at the language to see if it's worth reworking. And I'm particularly concerned, I'm not sure if it was Mr. Carlson or Mr. Ford who raised the question of, I think it was Mr. Ford, the last line of subdivision two, other orders, the special master final not subject to review by the court. That does make these masters pretty significant people. They're not people who are, elected. Obviously, we have had court referees, and in fact, relative to the appearance of Senator Merriam's former staff, also in effect, Mr. Chairman, your former staff, since you succeeded Senator Merriam. You know, Senator Merriam is the person who always led the fight on the utilization of referees, and he wanted referees abolished because they were not really answerable, since they were not appointed by the governor, they were not elected by the electorate, they were simply appointed by judges, and we've given the referees some significant authority. The legislature has gone, again, very gradually, year by year, in the opposite direction relative to the referees. Now, this language, as best I can tell, it's the first time I've seen it, starts to go the opposite direction in giving these masters some significant new authority. So I'm not sure. I'd be happy to have a fuller, have another discussion in the full committee. My sense is that I'd have to be convinced to not simply support an amendment to remove it. But I don't know if we want to wait and have Senator Olson available to discuss it. And again, I'm just trying to absorb. I haven't looked at Rule 53 for a while, so I'm trying to absorb the rule and compare it to the language, the new language.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, should we at this point delete that last sentence of the subdivision? Because that seems to freak everybody out, making the masters of the universe.
That helps.
That would be huge. That would help to start with.
Well, certainly,
let's do that.
I would move to amend, Mr. Chairman, to delete line 10.13. Is there other language?
That would be very good.
Mr. Chairman and members, the suggestion of Senator Higgins on 10, after master deleting of that sentence, 10.11, judge, free restriction so that you can actually use one, would be very, which would go a long way to cleaning up the language.
Okay, I'd incorporate that, Mr. Chairman.
Counsel, help us out.
Mr. Chair, members, it's what was just suggested. It was page 10, line 10, delete everything after master. Line 11, delete everything before the.
Period.
And then delete line 10.13.
Second thought.
All right.
Further discussion? All those in favor indicate by aye.
Aye.
Contrary, nay. Motion prevails.
Nice. Mr. Chairman, nice catch.
Okay. Renew your motion. Senator Higgins?
Yep.
Senator Higgins moves to adjourn. Or do we need a motion on the...
We need a vote to send it.
Yeah. I renew my motion to pass this bill on to finance.
As amended.
One more thing.
I just want to make sure, if we're passing the bill, we want to make sure one conforms to the other. It was just pointed out that on line 39 of the spreadsheet, the Uniform Laws Commission is different from what's in the bill. It reflects $52,000 a year, $104,000 for the biennium. I think the bill reflects $50,000. Chairman, I'm not sure what the intent of the chair was, but...
That was a mistake.
You're right.
Off the motion.
Pardon? Uniform laws?
It's on page 2, line 22.
It's $100,000. That's what this spreadsheet shows.
52 and 50.
I'm sorry, I think I misread that. Okay, I apologize.
It's correct.
Sorry.
And so this, Senator Higgins.
I have a motion on the table.
All right. All those in favor of the motion indicated by aye?
Aye.
Contrary, nay. Motion prevailed. Now, may we adjourn?
No, let's do something else.
Let's rewrite Rule 53, whatever that is.
I don't have anything.
We're done.
You didn't plan ahead, though.
Sure.
You can stick around for a couple minutes.
Meeting adjourned.